spanning the nerd world and feeding your fandom.
Crash landed.
From comics to video games.
From the cinematic universe to television.
This is Earth.
Connecting you to the biggest stars in the industry.
Something out there had discovered us.
It's time for the Down and Nerdy Podcast. Here's your host, James Witham.
Seems like we could use a bit of witchcraft right about now. It's episode 308 of the Down and Nerdy Podcast. I'm James Witham, and I'm going to tell you right now, I mean, yes, things are crazy, but you know what we're going to do? We're going to try not to focus on that this week, and we're going to focus on some great comics, some great shows. Might have to change things up depending on how much nerd news there is, though. I could tell you that right now. There is something big that I want to talk about, but might throw in a couple of extra reviews this week. Just stick with me here. We'll see how it goes. But we're definitely going to be talking about Freeform's new series, Motherland, Fort Salem, which you can see every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time on Freeform. I'm going to be talking to Jessica Sutton, who plays Tally Craven on the show. That's right, one of the three witches that you see on the main poster of the show. In case you don't know the premise, it's witches that are basically taking over as they got their amnesty 300 years ago because they've agreed to fight for the U.S. military. So it's a very, very interesting premise. Got to see the first episode early, and it's got some very cool things in it as well. So you're going to want to check that out. You're also going to want to stick around to find out a great deal I've got for you from Keeps this week. Yes, Keeps sponsoring the show. I will let you know a great deal on how you can keep your hair. But first, you know we're going to start things out with comics. It's what we're reading on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
Hi, this is Rioter Ryan Parrott, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
Maybe you've had a little extra time for bagging and boarding. Either way, whether it's digital or physical, whatever you're reading on, it's time for what we're reading. As a matter of fact, a couple of big books out this week, but let's start with DC Comics because it's the big 80th anniversary celebration of Robin. So I decided to go Robin 80th anniversary, 100-page spectacular. There are so many amazing creators on here that it would take me forever to list all of them. Go to dccomics.com to get your list because there are plenty. And this is a celebration of all the Robins. You've got plenty of Dick Grayson stories in there. There's Tim Drake stories. There's a Jason Todd story in there. Even Super Sons are part of this. Stephanie Brown, Damian Wayne. So it really runs the gamut of a whole bunch of different Robins and a whole bunch of different stories. It just goes to show you the legacy of the character and a character that's finally getting his due or even her due, depending on who's wearing the red suit, because each Robin, it just goes to show you how different each Robin really is. There was even a Dick Grayson from Grayson story from Tim Seeley and Tom King from that run as well. It just goes to show you the different paths they all took, the different relationships that they all had with Batman. Actually, one of my favorite stories in here was the Jason Todd story that was written by Judd Winnick and the amazing art by Dustin Nguyen. There was far more emotion to it than I would have expected, and it was a very cool side story, something that was very out of character for the Jason Todd that we've come to know. And that's not something, it's something I would have expected from one of the other Robins, but not Jason Todd. And that was one of the things that really, really just kind of drew me to that. There's also a Tim Drake story written by James Tynan IV with Javier Fernandez as an artist that really, really stood out to me in this. But the very first story in this book is a Dick Grayson story from Marv Wolfman with pencils by Tom Grummett and Scott Hanna on the inks. And I think it might be the best one out of all of them because it's very much it's a very early Robin story, and it touches on something. Again, I do these spoiler free, but it touches on something that's a very important part of the character's lineage and a very important moment in the relationship between Batman and Robin, between Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson. And just to watch the way it plays out through Marv Wolfman's eyes, somebody who could, you know, really appreciate that moment. And it showed in that particular story. And it was just so amazing to me how that played out. And then you've also got the, anytime they do one of these, there's always one story in here that kind of sets up something that's yet to come. And that Damian Wayne story, the Robin Son of Batman story written by Robbie Thompson, does exactly that. So this is an important issue going forward. And I got to tell you, it was, for somebody who's always loved the Robin character, and, you know, people ask me, well, who's your Robin? Well, my Robin's always going to be Dick Grayson, even though I was kind of in the Jason Todd era more, as far as when I started, when I really got into Batman comics. But I always gravitated towards Dick Grayson more. That's probably because of more of the earlier animated series and things like that. I'm not talking about Batman, the animated series. I'm talking about like Super Friends, Filmation, and the Filmation type stuff that was out there. That's just what always drew me to the character. And of course, the Batman 66 series as well certainly helped with that. So I got to say, I'm so glad that I decided to sit down and read this one. I mean, the 100-page spectacular is worth the 100 pages. Pick up this book if you get a chance. You will not be disappointed, especially if you're a fan of the Robin character. There's also a Spider-Woman solo series that we told you about not too long ago at downandnerdypodcast.com. It is finally here. Spider-Woman number one from Marvel Comics. Carla Pacheco on the writing there. Sorry there, Carla. Perez on the art. And Franco Di Armada on the colors. There's also a backup story in this called New Costume Who Dis? And it's by Carla and Paolo Sequeira doing the pencils there. Oren Jr. on the inks. And Frank Di Armada once again on the colors. VC's Travis Lanham doing the lettering for the issue. And the cover that was actually done by Jung Jin Yoon. And that is really just pops and stands out. And there's a reason that there's a helicopter on the cover. I could tell you that much right now. And you know that Jessica Drew, she's a new mom. She's trying to figure out the whole, you know, being a hero thing and being a mom. But she's doing something not quite, I mean, it's certainly heroic enough. But at the same time, it's definitely something that she's doing out of necessity. That much I could tell you for sure. And of course, when you're doing something like this, you're there for a reason, sort of thing, right? So you sort of find out what that reason is times 100. But there's something else going on with Jessica during this whole thing as well. And I do this spoiler free, so I can't really get into what it is. But what I love here is you get a lot of action in this book. You get a lot of attitude from Jessica too, which I really, really love. It's one of those things where you're either going to love her for it or you're not, and I loved it. I thought that it made it really edgy. There's a new suit inside of this. If you didn't see the previews, any of the preview pages, there is a new suit that gets debuted. I am loving the new suit. I like the classic suit too, classic Spider-Woman suit too, don't get me wrong. But there's just something about this one that makes sense to me. And really, really made it stand out. But there's something about that suit. And that's kind of all I can tell you. We'll find something else out. Read that story at the end of the book. That extra story that gets thrown in. It is a part of the story. It's almost like we get to see, it's almost like we rewind a couple of days. And then in the story that's at the end. But throughout the book, you'll understand. It'll make the rest of the book make much more sense, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at. But this was another one where I thought that, you wonder, can certain characters carry books on their own? And that goes for any character that's not like a main Avenger character, right? And I wonder to myself too, I'd like, can Spider-Woman carry her own book? I like the character, but can she carry her own book? And I kind of feel like absolutely she can because of the way the character is being portrayed and just the edginess that she has to her. I really, really liked that edginess, that kind of bit of sarcasm, but at the same time, it's almost like you were taking a little bit of Deadpool and mixing in some Jessica Jones type attitude, right? But also you're looking at a mom who's doing what she needs to do to help out her family in the best way that she can, and still trying to, we get a little bit of her trying to balance things out as well. So I thought this was a really, really cool issue. It definitely was something I was hoping was going to be really good. I was not disappointed. I'd throw this on my pull box as well. So that's Spider-Woman number one from Marvel Comics and Robin the 100-page 80th anniversary spectacular. Grab both of those. I do not think you'll be sorry that you did. That's going to do it for Nerd News. Up next, going to be tackling Superman Red Son. My spoiler-ish review is that is up next on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
Hey, this is voice actor Roger Craig Smith, and you guys are listening, you lucky people, to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
And we're back.
This one's for you, comrades. One of the most popular and most famous Elseworlds stories in DC Comics history has finally come to Warner Brothers Home Entertainment and DC Animation, and that is Superman Red Son. And I'm going to give my spoiler-ish review of the movie right now. I just want to let you know, Warner Brothers Home Entertainment did provide me with a free copy of this Blu-ray and actually 4K Ultra for review here. All thoughts are my own. I just want to make that very, very clear. Now, as I move into this, if you're not familiar with Superman Red Son, I'm going to give you the very bare bones basics. It's basically, the gist of it is, what if Superman's pod didn't land on in the U.S., in Kansas? What if it landed somewhere else and it lands in the Ukraine and he becomes basically the symbol of the Soviet Union instead of truth, justice, and the American way? That's the gist of the Superman Red Son story that was written by Mark Miller all those years ago. Now, I will tell you this. If you're a fan of the graphic novel, the comic, whatever you want to call it, then it's pretty faithful. I mean, really faithful to the source material. I mean, there's certain things that are added a little bit here and there, but not necessarily. We're not seeing something that's going to be a huge differentiation from what you saw in the graphic novel. Now, whether you think that that's a criticism or a good thing, I will leave that for you to decide. I don't think it's a bad thing, just because some stories you just want to see brought to life, right? Superman Red Son was one of those things. And I think that what the comic did so well, what the story did so well when Miller wrote it, was that, you know, the morally gray areas of this story, you can really feel them come to life in the performances with these actors. Because, I mean, reading it on the page, yes, but then you see it and you go, okay, well, Lex Luthor is finally acting like Lex Luthor. But then you see Superman doing some stuff as well, and you're going, really? That doesn't seem like that's a very nice thing to do. That doesn't seem very Superman-like. But that's the point. That's exactly the point of this story. It's an Elseworlds story. You're not looking at the Superman that you know. You're looking at a version of a Superman that was really manipulated in this story and manipulated by Brainiac unbeknownst to him. Now, when Brainiac gets involved in the story, it doesn't happen early on. It's not like this is all Brainiac, right? Because Superman was still making some questionable decisions. He did some great things too, don't get me wrong, but there were some questionable decisions before Brainiac was ever even in the picture. So you see how Brainiac manipulates him, and in the back of your mind, if you're a fan of any Superman stories and know who Brainiac is, you've got to kind of say to yourself, it's Brainiac. You know that he's not just like this loyal soldier, right? Even in an Elseworlds story, at the end of the day, this is still Brainiac, right? So you got to keep an eye on him. And instead, Superman was greatly manipulated by Brainiac in this story. So that's one of the very interesting parts and what the culmination of this story actually ends up being in the end is the final battle. Again, a lot of spoilers here. Not final battle, but with Brainiac in the end. But there are so many other battles in this movie that are really, really good. Like you've got the fight with Superman and Batman. That's a really, really good one. Also, the Superior Man, as they call him, which we know it's really bizarre, right? But Superior Man, which was created by Lex Luthor, that was a good one. I loved seeing the Green Lantern Corps be brought to life in animation like that, almost like a bomber squad type get the bomber jackets on, and I just loved that look of the Green Lantern Corps, which of course again was defeated by Superman. But still, at the same time, getting to see these things brought to life in animation was just really, really cool for me as somebody who just really enjoys Mark Miller's story. And what I really love is that you see, you know, what can be adversaries and what can be clashing ideals can sort of be put aside for the greater good when it's necessary, right? And I think that that's something that's a really, really interesting undercurrent in this particular movie, which I thought was really, really cool. And again, you're talking about a group that knows exactly what they're doing in Warner Brothers Home Entertainment and DC Animation. They've had hit after hit after hit. And you get plenty of action in this movie, but it doesn't overload it. What you also get is, again, that morally gray area, but it seems like the true hero in this story, if you want to pick a couple, are women. You've got Wonder Woman, Diana, who basically, you know, at first she's, you know, kind of there's a diplomatic relationship between Superman there in this movie, right? That was really, really intriguing. And then she sort of, you know, breaks ties with him at some point because she saw the gray area. And she's like, I'm not okay with this. And if you're not going to change who you are, then I'm not going to put you down, but I'm not going to help you either, sort of thing. You know, like, I'm not going to watch you die, but I'm also not going to let you push your narrative, sort of thing. And then the other hero in this, to me anyway, is Lois Lane. And it's weird to see Lois and Lex together, first of all, but again, welcome to Elseworlds. But then you've got Lois Lane, who really is a hero in this story, and you see her kind of check Lex's morality as well with the whole Superior Man thing and what he did there and certain other things that he sort of did along the way. But yet she still sort of stayed with him, and you've got to wonder what you want to talk about an Elseworlds of an Elseworlds. What would have happened if Lois just left him, right? Just completely leaves him. And he's left to his own devices. That might have made things even worse. And who knows where this story would have gone if that were the case. But we get to see certain things come to light here. You know, like Lex becoming president. We get to see that. And we get to see how that plays out differently in an Elseworlds type situation. Now, the ending, a little bit different. A little bit, I don't want to say blah, but uneventful, I guess you could say. Unless you consider the ending what happens in the final fight with Brainiac, and everything else is sort of an epilogue, right? Everything else is sort of an aftermath of that. If the ending of the movie to you is that is what happens in the aftermath of that fight, is what happens directly after that fight with Brainiac, then okay, that's a good ending right there. And I guess you can't just leave it like that, right? You've got to round it out in a different way. So if that's your ending, then okay, then I'll accept that. It is a really good ending. But beyond that, it's like, okay, that's where we're going to leave it. All right, I guess that's okay. It wasn't bad either. It was just like a ho-hum sort of situation compared to some of the others that have had a little bit more impact. And it's hard to really compare the two. But I mean, if we're talking about performances, I thought Amy Acker was fantastic as Lois Lane. Vanessa Marshall knocked it out of the park as Wonder Woman, as she always does. Jason Isaacs, I really enjoyed Jason Isaacs as your Red Sun Superman. I thought that, I mean, he really brought it. He did a fantastic job. So, I mean, another just amazing casting job by the folks at DC and Warner Brothers for this one. And I will say this, though, as I kind of round things out here, did I enjoy it as much as I enjoyed Batman Gotham by Gaslight, which was the other Elseworlds story that they did? I don't know that I did, but it was also a different experience for me, too, because I watched Gotham by Gaslight in DC and DC back in 2018, and it was in a small theater with a bunch of other people, and, you know, it was a different experience. And for Superman Red Sun, I'm watching it, you know, here at home, so maybe that made me like Gotham by Gaslight a little more, but I tended to kind of gravitate towards that story a little more as well. Both very good stories, but I tended to like Gotham by Gaslight a little more. This one definitely, though, worth the watch if you really, especially if you're a fan of the original comic, the graphic novel anyway, you're going to enjoy this because you're going to see that brought to life. And maybe that's a book you haven't read in a while, but you're still familiar with. And it's a good way to refamiliarize yourself with that story. So Superman, Red Son, go ahead and grab it. You will not be sorry that you did. It is available now on Blu-ray, 4K Ultra, and also on digital HD. This week, the Down and Nerdy Podcast is brought to you by Keeps, and I know what you're thinking when you look in the mirror. You're like, this isn't good. I see the hair going backward a little bit. Male pattern baldness kind of hits by the time you're 35 for 2 out of 3 guys, but you don't have to go bald, and you don't have to go broke either with Keeps, because prevention is the key here. Really, and Keeps treatments really work. They're up to 90% effective at reducing and stopping further hair loss. So basically, the sooner you get on this, the more hair you'll actually be able to save on the top of your head. And if you don't believe me, go ahead and check out all the 5-star reviews that they have, more so than any of their competitors. Nearly 100,000 men are trusting Keeps with their hair loss prevention medication right now. And if you want to get your first month's treatment absolutely free, go to keeps.com/nerdy. Seriously, the first month is actually going to be free for your treatment if you go to keeps.com/nerdy. Bottom line here, don't sulk, don't wait. You can help stop your hair loss right now and bring that hair back to where you want it to be with Keeps. That's going to do it for my spoiler-filled-ish review of Superman Red Son. Up next, how about another review? I'm going to talk about Netflix's Letter to the King. Up next, I'm James Witham, and this is the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is Vanessa Marshall, voice of Gamora on Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy and Hera on Star Wars Rebels on Disney XD. And you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
Netflix is going to be taking you on another quest, streaming right now, Letter to the King from Netflix. And I'm going to actually talk about just the first episode here. And the reason I'm going to do that is this thing just hit Netflix. I know you probably haven't been able to dive into it too much. I totally get that. So that is why I'm only going to be talking about the first episode here. And basically, we have a story about a young man named Thierry, who's played by Emir Wilson. Now, Thierry is kind of like adopted by this really famous knight, Sir Thierry the Valiant. And he's sort of taken in and shown, and he's expected now. He's basically his son, so he's expected to follow in his adoptive father's footsteps and become a knight himself. Problem is Thierry doesn't exactly have those kind of skills at his disposal. So there's a little bit of a struggle there, and that's a big part of the first episode is Thierry going through these trials of knighthood and how that sort of goes for him. And then you sort of meet some of the other kids that along the way that are a part of it. He does get befriended by one particular potential knight in this group. And you're basically setting up the fact that Thierry is the one that you want to root for so bad, but just might not have the skills to get things done. And you will absolutely 100% not like Sir Thierry the Valiant, played by David Wenham. I'm sorry, you will not like this character at all. And I'm not saying it because he's a bad character. I'm just saying that he's a real jerk. That's the best way that I could possibly put it. He is not the nicest dude in the world. And even Thierry's mom sort of pushes him and apologizes for how Sir Thierry treats him. The one guy you're going to like for sure, I think, is Bors, and he's played by Johannes Hakur Johannesson. And let me tell you right now, he's the one that sort of helps Thierry along the way, helps him learn the ways of the sword, helps him train him in the ways of knighthood. And you're thinking, well, couldn't his father have done that, right? Apparently he's busy off doing knight stuff, so he really, really can't do that. And then what you have going on in the background while all this is going on is there's war being waged, of course, because it's medieval times sort of setting, and that's what happens back then. There's wars and epic battles and things like that. And there's a prince that has kind of gone off his rocker a little bit. And I'm talking about Prince Viridian, played by Jids Blum. And I'm sorry if I butchered that name. When I tell you that this prince has gone off his rocker, you know how you can get, you know, like kind of mad with power, right? So that's exactly kind of the thing that's happening with this prince, mad with power. And I'm not going to spoil anything other than the fact that he's pretty darn ruthless. But there's something else about this prince that makes him even more dangerous. And that's what I'm going to tell you. So you figure, okay, somebody that dangerous needs to be stopped, right? Well, that's exactly how someone feels, and they're trying to send word to the king about exactly what this prince is doing. I mean, when you're thousands of miles away, it's hard to know what's going on in the battlefield if you're not there. And maybe the king wouldn't approve. Maybe he would. We don't know, because the king doesn't know what's going on. Hence the title of the show, Letter to the King. So there's a certain set of circumstances that come around this, and you might figure you know who gets the letter. I'm not going to spoil it for you, or the circumstances that go into that, again, because maybe you haven't had a chance to check this out. So that's basically the gist of the story as I can give it to you, the best I can give it to you without really spoiling anything. I will say this, though. I was interested in trying to get to know the characters early on, and I certainly felt bad for Tyri when his adopted father was just a jerk and, you know, kind of really pushed him and then tried to do something else that was very, very unchivalrous in my estimation. And you really felt bad for him. And then you see him sort of, at least, I mean, he sticks with it, that's for sure. So he sticks with it. And then you see something happen in a group setting that sort of sets things off on a different path, right? And that's kind of where that first episode ends. Now, here's the thing. You have to be taken in by these characters to really be interested in continuing. To me, the mark of a good show on something like Netflix or any streaming service where the episodes get released all at once, it's that countdown after that first episode to me. You know, when you get through an episode and you have that next episode starting in 15 seconds or whatever, am I at all considering waiting to watch that next episode, no matter what my circumstances are? Like, if I really know I need to go to sleep, but it's a really good show, I'm going to keep going anyway. There's tried and true memes about that online all the time and on social media. But is it a show where it's like, I could watch the rest of this tomorrow, and then you forget about it for a few days? To me, this show doesn't exactly break a ton of new ground. And one of the things this show is going to really suffer from is the fact that The Witcher was so successful on Netflix. Now, completely different story, very different tone. I understand that. And I know maybe it's not even fair for me to compare the two, but quite frankly, that's the thing you're still thinking about and talking about is The Witcher, right? Now, unlike The Witcher, which could be really complicated at times, it's pretty straightforward what's happening in A Letter to the King. It's pretty obvious is with what's happening in The Letter to the King. There's no real mystery there other than how they're going to go about this quest. But to me, this is like, okay, you're trying to be a mishmash of a few different similar stories, and I don't know if your characters are big and vibrant enough to sustain me wanting to keep going unless you give me something really, really solid to go on. Now the prince is probably the best part of this show because the prince is so evil and so intriguing, but you also have to say, oh, okay, well, who's the adversary? Who are the heroes that are going to bring down the prince? And I'm not saying I don't think that they can do it necessarily. Again, when you're one episode in, it's really kind of hard to make that estimation. So I'm not going to go there. But the problem is that, okay, how interested am I in the quest that's going forward? And in a show like this, you have to be just as interested in the quest as you do the characters. It's 50-50 here. So I'm a little more interested in the quest than the characters, and I know that there's going to be more layers to this story, but I'm not rushing to get to the rest of this series, unfortunately. This is just one that it didn't intrigue me enough when I know that there are other options, and there's certainly plenty. I know that, you know, we're stuck inside now and you're going to want to give things a try. Give this a try and see what you think of it. This, if you love shows like this, then you probably won't be disappointed if you're okay with the similar themes, because there are plenty of similar themes in this. And we are talking about a younger cast here too. So again, it might appeal to a younger audience a little bit more than it did to me. So I will say that it's not, there's certainly some scary stuff about it. It's not really too hardcore for younger adults. I probably wouldn't show this to my 5-year-old necessarily, but it wouldn't be terrible either. I mean, this is your best judgment as to, you know, watch the first episode. If you think it's okay for your kids, then you can base it on that. And of course, base it on the rating that it's given. But to me, it just didn't grab me enough to make me want to keep that countdown going and say, yeah, I've got to see this next episode now, because I have to see where this goes. Maybe that hook comes later on. We'll wait and see. I will still get to the rest of this and maybe update my review at downandnerdypodcast.com. I'll just have to wait and see. But right now, not exactly hooked on The Letter to the King. I'd actually be curious to see what you think. That's going to do it for my kind of maybe one or two spoilers of The Letter to the King from Netflix. Up next, yeah, there's still a few nerd news items to talk about, and we'll do it non-coronavirus related. I promise. It's next on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is Aline Powell from Siren on Freeform, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
Time to get next gen, gamers. It's time for nerd news, and yes, one of the moments you've been waiting for anyway has finally arrived. The technical specs were released for the PS5 console by Sony in their presentation. I will get to the actual presentation part here in a second, but I'm not going to go ahead and like try and give you some sort of a science lesson or try and talk to you about teraflops and things like that. If you're really into that, you've already looked at the technical specs anyway. Let me just put it this way. The graphics processing unit, going to be really fast, going to be really powerful. Also going to have really, really good memory bandwidth, about almost 500 gigs per second of that. The internal storage maybe could have been a little bit better. I mean, it's 825 gigs. It's still pretty good. You've also got expandable storage from the NVMe SSD slot. And you've also got USB HDD support. And you've got the 4K drive, the optical drive in there as well. So, I mean, you've got plenty of other options as far as expandable memory is concerned. It's going to be fast. It's going to be powerful. But if you're looking at it, it's really not really that different from the Xbox One X in a lot of different areas. I think it was IGN that posted the side-by-side comparison. Now, if I'm remembering that comparison correctly, the memory bandwidth was bigger on the PS5. So if that's something that's important to you, then yeah, that's something that is going to be a big deal. But here's the thing that got fans upset. And I'm going to say that I don't really blame them, because as the average gamer, right, the average gaming fan isn't necessarily interested in the numbers here, right? Other than how many games can I fit on there and what's the lag going to be like? Those are the two things, and load times too. Those are the three things that gamers care about. You throw a number at them, and you could go, oh, you know, for the average gamer, right? Now, if you're a hardcore, you're into all the technical specs, but you just want to know how many freaking games can you load on there? How long is it going to take to load them on there? And am I going to get lag when I'm playing? Those are the kinds of things that you want to know about. And beyond that, fans wanted to see the console. You didn't show it. All right. I mean, did they have to? Was that a deal breaker? I don't know. Maybe it kind of was. Do you do this until you're done with that? I don't know. And the one thing that I got to say, and I got to get on fans for this a little bit. If you were expecting trailers, nah. I mean, you can't. I think that was a little bit of too much of an ask, especially for right now. You can't really get developers involved in anything right now. This was their way of trying to say, okay, well, here's what the specs of the game of the console are going to look like, and give you something to compare against the Xbox One X. Now, if you're a Microsoft fan, if you're an Xbox fan, you're going to point to certain things and say, well, that's the same, and actually we've got a little bit more on this. Okay, fine. But it's a matter, we really are at the point where it's a matter of taste, isn't it? And it's a matter of what is the most important thing to you. And if the memory bandwidth thing is the most important thing to you, then it looks like PS5 has a little bit of an advantage there over the Xbox One X. But again, until you're physically seeing it, right? Until you're seeing it in action, you want to see the controller, because controller is a big deal, right? And I think we might have gotten a little bit of a reveal of the controller. And I don't really think it would be that different anyway from what they've already had. But you wanted to see it, right? You want something tangible, not just a bunch of numbers thrown at you. And I understand that. So the bottom line is, they're going to be powerful. You know, they're just going to be. And I'm not sure that this moves the needle much one way or the other. Now, when you actually see something rendered and how it plays, that might. But until then, I don't know that we're talking about, you know, reinventing the wheel here as far as, yeah, it's going to be more powerful, but seeing is believing, quite frankly, and we're not going to get to do that yet. Speaking of seeing is believing, we did get to see the Season 2 trailer for DC Universe's Harley Quinn, which is going to be returning on April the 3rd. And the thing, one of the things that struck me about the trailer is it promised to be raunchier. How is that possible? I mean, Patrick Schumacher and Justin Halpern, you might be listening. How is that possible? Because it was pretty raunchy in Season 1 and pretty hilarious. And this trailer was really funny, too. When Bane talks about being in the folding chair, I lost it. Maybe I shouldn't have. Maybe it was stupid, but I love Bane. I love Bane in this series. And Harley's still on her quest to be the most feared supervillain. And she's got her team with her. And her entrance to her new lair, very interesting. Very, very interesting. I will say that. There's just, again, everybody that you love is going to be back for this. But then you're adding in Catwoman, who we only get to see briefly, but I loved the look. I'm just going to throw that out there right now. Loved the look. And you've got Mr. Freeze joining the mix as well. I'm really, really excited for Alfred Molina as Mr. Freeze. Because he's just a good actor. He can deliver. But he's also, he's got more comedic timing than I think he's given credit for in other roles that he's had. He tends to be looked at as someone, you know, more of a serious, dramatic actor. But remember, well, of course, he was Doc Ock, right? So he's no stranger to the superhero genre, but just something that just feels like a perfect marriage to me. And I think that's really, really going to come over well. Plus, it seems like everybody that gets involved with this Harley Quinn animated series on DC Universe, it's kind of like everybody goes back and goes, ah, finally, yeah, I can just cut loose on this and have fun. That just seems like the vibe that's been created, and it comes across, not just when you watch a trailer, never mind the episodes, it really comes across because you get to see the whole thing. In this short trailer, you can hear it in the voices of these actors, where they're going, ah, oh, finally. Like, oh, we can finally just cut loose and do something different. And that's what you're getting to do with this no-holds-barred adaptation of Harley Quinn. Yeah, April 3rd, DC Universe, I'm there. Sign me up. I'm ready. I was ready before the trailer, to be honest. I'm really ready now. Gonna go back to gaming here for a second, because Valiant dropped some news that I didn't really expect, and some video game news at that. How about the fact that the Shadow Man game, where what was that? Was for Nintendo 64 originally, wasn't it? And there was a PC version as well, I believe. It's going to be remastered and put back out. And that is not something I expected at all. I mean, it was kind of a cult classic game when it was out, right? And I think it was re-released again in, what, 2014? something like that. It was also on PlayStation. Acclaim Studios did it. Well, now it's going to be brought back by Valiant Entertainment and Night Dive Studios. And again, it's basically going to be just a remaster of the original game, right? You're going to be able to protect humanity from the demons of the dead side and, you know, the ones that come into our world. That's what the Shadow Man does. You know that already, right? So it's going to be 4K widescreen display. There's going to be dynamic shadow mapping, pretty appropriate because you're talking about Shadow Man here. Of course, you know they're going to refine the art and the audio and stuff like that. They're going to refine the gameplay experience a little bit. So we're going to get Xbox and PS4 controller support, by the way, too. So that's really, really important aspect of this. And it's going to be available on Steam, too, by the way. So that's a really, really important thing. It's also going to be coming to Windows PC on GOG platforms, and you're going to get it on PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch. So if you're on Switch, yes, you will be able to play the remastered Shadow Man game. I remember that Valiant had promised to start making more games not too long ago, right? So this is at least a good step in that direction of remastering this Shadow Man game. I don't ever recall playing this, to be honest. So this will be a good chance for me because I love the character and I can't wait for Cullen Bunn's Shadow Man story that's going to be coming up. And I'm really, really looking forward to actually getting a chance to play this time. I mean, I've got my Windows PC right here fired up and ready to go. I'm thinking that, you know, you get on Steam and you can go ahead and play this thing. And as I'm kind of searching through the press release, I don't see a release date specifically for the... the Shadow Man comic is going to be coming on May the 20th. So that much you know, but we don't know exactly when the game is going to be out. And again, right now, you know, things were a little bit difficult. So this is just something I'm really looking forward to. I think Valiant not only has a lot of viability for movies and TV shows, why aren't they doing video games? These are really good characters that if you don't know enough about them, shame on you, because they are pretty great characters. I mean, Exo Man of War, I think, could have a great video game. Ninjak could have a great video game as well. The list goes on and on and on, really. So, yeah, Shadow Man being remastered, I'm all for that. Bring it on, because I finally want to be able to play this game, because I don't think I ever did on Nintendo 64. Well, Disney might be delaying some movies, but they are not delaying their comics at Dark Horse. As a matter of fact, remember Disney Villains? That was a series that's supposed to be coming to Disney Plus, right? I don't know if it still is or isn't. Everything seems kind of up in the air at this point, but Disney Villains is coming to Dark Horse Comics, and this was the press release that was released by Dark Horse recently. The first story is actually going to be Disney Villains Ursula and the Seven Seas, of course, based on Ursula from The Little Mermaid. And the cover, that if you haven't seen the cover yet, go to downandnerdypodcast.com. You're going to want to check out this cover, because it is, I mean, it's a great depiction of Ursula. It's actually going to be written by Sherrielle Smith and art by Gabrielle Bagnoli. And the synopsis for this, basically, and I'll read this word for word for you: long before the events of Disney's The Little Mermaid and Ariel's quest to be a part of the human world, Ursula was one of the seven sea witches who each ruled one of the seven seas with impunity. But when one of Ursula's sea sisters is found stripped of all her powers, Ursula must find the culprit. And among the merfolk, there is one who dares defy the reign of the sea witches. So, I mean, that seems like a pretty intriguing premise to me right there. And you can get your hands on this on June the 24th. Of this year. But again, there is any number of Disney villains that you can take on with this, and this is just the first of what I hope are many of these. And maybe, you know, and this could, there could be a gray area here too, because you've got certain villains in Disney where, like, are they a villain or are they not a villain? Maybe we'll toe that line a little bit. Maybe Dark Horse will help us answer that question. I think Ursula, a good call to start with. You certainly could have started with Maleficent, if you wanted to, being that that character is very fresh in everyone's mind. You could have started with Jafar, Mufasa, something like that. Again, that fresh in people's minds. Ursula, I think a good call. We know the live-action Little Mermaid movie is going to be coming eventually. Not anytime soon, but eventually, right? And, you know, The Seven Seas, not a bad setting art-wise either to really make things pop in your first miniseries. So I think that this is a good call by Dark Horse, just one of many Dark Horse books that I can't wait for. So yeah, keep an eye on the show for future interviews and reviews of Dark Horse books, because there's a lot of great stuff coming from Dark Horse. That's going to do it for Nerd News. Up next, let's talk about Motherland Fort Salem from Freeform. Jessica Sutton joins me to talk about that next on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is Taylor Hickson from Deadly Class, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is one show that we've been looking forward to and has been on our radar for a while, Motherland Fort Salem from Freeform, which you can now watch every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So happy to have Tally Craven herself with me this week, Jessica Sutton. Jessica, how you doing?
I'm so happy to be here. Well, yeah, metaphorically speaking.
Well, of course, yeah, metaphorically speaking.
Calling in from South Africa.
Yeah, they understand what you're saying. They get it. They get
it. In person, as it was.
Now, I actually think it's very easy, Jessica, to get hooked on the premise of this show alone. So what was your first impression when you first started reading those scripts?
I've never read anything like it before. I think the element of surprise is used within the show. And then just going from script to script, how much the character of Sally alone changed just was a gift. You know, how many things in life surprise you, and this show was one of it. So, you know, just off the bat, I love the world that Elliot had created, and specifically kind of just this reimagined symbol of the witch to, you know, kind of steering away from that typical Halloween cackling crone, mm-hmm. you know, or temptress fornicating with the devil, and kind of towards something far more empowering and positive and unifying. It's exciting. The whole thing's exciting.
I have to say, when I saw the first episode, I got to sit a little bit early, Tally's personality really stood out to me. So how would you describe her?
Well, on the page, the first thing I remember reading about her was that, and this is word for word, that she's a living exclamation mark. And I thought, how cool to describe somebody like that. And I remember thinking that, I mean, outside of that, I think she just personified compassion and curiosity and innocence. And then I think throughout the show, you just see that innocence growing up and becoming wisdom with all the discernment and assertion, you know, all the good stuff that pain teaches you. Yeah, and her just kind of waking into the woman that she's going to be and waking into the witch. But I think her boundless enthusiasm for life is something that I can really relate to.
Speaking of waking into the witch, obviously being a witch, we know that Tally's going to have certain abilities and magic that she's capable of. How cool was it to bring out that skill set for the first time? And tell fans, where do you think she's at in terms of her skill level early on?
Well, at the beginning, I mean, because she's been raised, so her mother, kind of a little backstory, Mae Craven kind of lost her sisters in battle. And so the Craven line has been almost diminished, and they were given a dispensation to not fight. And so Mae Craven decided to raise Tally Craven away from the world and kind of in this bubble of a matrifocal compound, this community that's purely run by women and a void of men. And that really, I think, influences Tally's naivete of what she thinks the world is like. But I think just as the curious person that she is, she can't help but wonder, you know, into kind of what awaits outside of that bubble. And I think she just ultimately knows that goodness is in her and the world needs more goodness. And it's simple for Tally like that. She's a good heart, you know. So her mother kind of really just pushes her own fear and, you know, prejudice towards the system in hopes of swaying Tally into never joining. And of course, Tally chooses to volunteer despite her mother's wishes, which I think is it's definitely not an easy act for her. She loves her mother, but I think her love for the world is greater, and I think she just inherently knows that in some way she's kind of denying her full potential by staying with her mother and living in fear. And there is so much good to come out of stepping into one's full power and serving something greater than yourself.
definitely. Now, the dynamic between Tally, Rael, and Abigail is a very, very interesting one. So talk about the group a little bit, and what would you actually say her place in the group is?
Well, I find, Costa and I, we like to talk about these characters as character types, just so we don't give anything away. But I like to think of Rael, Abigail, and Tally like a triangle. And Rael, as the rebel, I would say represents like a questioning mind. Abigail is just of the leader, born soldier, represents the body. And Tally is this, like, the truest believer, the doer of good deeds, and the shiny glue, like, between these two alphas, represents the heart. So, you know, and I just feel like all three experiences as opposed to the show, you know, the rebel learning something herself up above again, alpha leader learning, you know, step into her courage and take action and become her own person, and Lucy, the innocence, learn discernment and grow into her wisdom. So, hope that explains it. In a surface way, but yeah, I mean, the dynamic in particular for Tally is like ultimately get the unity that, you know, the unit lives and dies together, and she serves as the peacemaker between the two alphas, or I like to think of them as kind of like the immovable objects and the unstoppable force, and her place is in the middle, kind of, you know, keeping the unit whole.
Definitely. We're talking to Jessica Sutton of Motherland Fort Salem, which you can see now every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Freeform. Now, Jessica, most shows have a big bad. We know that. But we all seem to you all seem to face something much bigger, more like an enemy than a big bad. So what can you tell us about them?
Okay, well, I think that in the show, fear is just personified in the Spree, which is the kind of the supernatural terrorist group. And all I will say, without giving too much away, is it's nothing is as it seems.
Yeah, that's definitely the truth. That much I can say for sure. Yeah. Now, this is not a spoiler because it's actually in the description of the first episode. We certainly don't want to spoil anything. You all are going to be going through basic training on the show. So talk about what shooting those early scenes were actually like.
Well, it was huge for the demand, saying that we are a military show. And I would not describe myself as an athletic person. And I think I can speak for the three of us in saying that we're not both gifted hand-eye coordinated. So we just went in embracing the whole challenge of it all. And I personally came out feeling like I'm a lot stronger than I give myself credit for. And it's always great to be in an uncomfortable, challenging situation where you walk out feeling, you know, more empowered than you left. We just had so much fun. In this alternative world, there's no guns, so our weapon of choice is rope dart, which is an ancient Chinese martial art. So you can imagine they came whole education around how to move and work with this tool. We had such incredible trainers, guns, so we owe them how good we look in the show.
I can only imagine. Now, there's actually a video that you guys posted on social media of you guys all taking the oath, which is a very powerful moment in the show. You can see how the three of you react differently to taking that oath. So how much can you tell us about Tally's feelings in that moment?
Well, I would say for Tally, it's very weighted for her in that she volunteered despite her mother's wishes. But she really is just filled with so much joy and pride. She sees this as her truest calling and her greatest privilege, and her really kind of stepping into her dream, as it was. And as an actor, I would say displaying that moment was surreal, that it was also like a dream come true for me. Just, you know, being from Cape Town, South Africa, you know, and having that active journey of just trying to get an international manager and just trying to get self tapes, and now, you know, landing a lead on a TV series. It just felt all kind of very emotional for that moment. Tally and Jess, just kind of feeling all the privilege in that moment was great.
Definitely. Now, Motherland Fort Salem not only shows women in more dominant roles, like you were saying, the cast is also nearly all women and probably gives women more screen time than any other scripted TV series, at least that I can think of anyway. How empowering do you feel like this series is just as a whole?
I mean, I think that's just the main, one of the main themes, just self-empowerment. I think the strength of the show is the diversity of the cast. And, you know, as a woman in this industry, I've definitely experienced so much woman-on-woman put down. To be in a cast of such diverse women, you know, just be past age, past gender, past culture, sexual orientation, you know, it's kind of just speaking for just the inclusivity of it all, but also, yeah, just as the sisterhood was on screen, it was also off. And I think off screen, I mean, these women have become my mentors, my greatest friends. It's been the truest gift in my life, personally and professionally.
Amazing. Now, Jessica, before I let you go, I know that fans are going to love the first episode, but I want you to tease ahead just a little bit without spoiling anything. Is there a specific episode coming up with the series that you really can't wait for everyone to see?
Oh, do I have to have one moment? You're killing me here. I would say in the whole show, I haven't seen much of it, so I know that I'm really anticipating episode 10. I remember reading it and just being, you know, jaw dropped. I did not see it coming. And it would just bring a really emotional ending for the show, for the season. And, yeah, personally for us, having gone through 5 months of shooting, it just felt like we were a family. And I think always the last episode is the most emotionally weighted when you're not just, you're realizing that, you know, you're coming to the end of that chapter together as a unit on and off screen. So I'm most excited for episode 10, which is probably a terrible tease because that's just, you have to make it through a whole season to really see what I'm talking about. But yeah.
That's okay. We've got a long way to go, and we can't wait for the ride because, hey, if you're looking for something new to watch, guess what? Motherland Fort Salem premieres on Freeform Wednesday, March the 18th at 9 p.m. and every Wednesday night. After that, yeah, you've got new episodes, so watch it. It's Jessica Sutton, who plays Tally Craven on the show. Thank you so much for joining me this week.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a blast.
You can just hear the charm of Tally in Jessica Sutton's voice, can't you? And her excitement just really mirrors Tally's excitement in that first episode of Motherland Fort Salem. And I've watched a little bit ahead, too. I mean, you're going to see plenty of happy Tally, but there's a lot more depth coming to that character as well. You're going to want to watch every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Motherland Fort Salem going to be a big hit on Freeform, and I just cannot wait for more. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Down and Nerdy Podcast. Again, thanks to the folks at Freeform for letting me chat with Jessica Sutton this week. If you want more on Motherland Fort Salem and see my review of the first episode, go to downandnerdypodcast.com. We also want to make sure you're supporting this week's sponsor, Keeps. That's right. You want to keep your hair? Go to keeps.com/nerdy and get your first month of treatment absolutely free. Make sure you're following us along on social media as well, at Down and Nerdy 757 on Twitter and on Instagram, and at Down and Nerdy on Facebook. Remember, you never have to apologize for being a nerd, so let your fan flag fly and be good to your fellow nerds.